Lickness, and you're listening to the weekly Become Your Best Coaching podcast. And you can listen to this podcast online at www.becomeyourbest.com, and that is with hyphens, so it's become-your-best.com. On that site, you can not only listen to previous podcasts, and you may be listening to this one right now, you can find out the number to dial in live to our podcast. We open up the lines for questions and answers at the end of each call, and we do not record that section of the call. So if you do want to participate live, feel free to dial in, as well as look at the upcoming agenda for future calls. Again, my name is Jeremy Lickness. I'm the CEO of Natural Physiques, and that's at naturalphysiques.com. Now, this evening we have a special guest with us, and this is none other than Paul Becker of the website trulyhuge.com. That's right. Paul, tell us a little bit about Truly Huge and what we can expect at that site.
Well, Truly Huge was first launched in 1996, and it was made to be a forum and a place where people can go and share ideas. We have a chat room, forum, and free email tips, fitness tips that's sent out weekly, and articles and supplements and informational products for sale also.
So that's, you said 1996 was when the site first came up.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's about 9 years, and in this industry, it's amazing how many websites come and go. I mean, there's literally, you'll find new sites launch, they're there for a few months, they're gone, and there's probably thousands of sites, literally. In fact, I would even venture to say hundreds of thousands, if not millions, in the health and wellness industry, but yours has been around for almost a decade now. What was it like in 96 when you first launched the site? Were there actually people out there looking for information?
Oh, yeah. I mean, actually, when I first started on the net, I would just, I didn't know a lot about it. In the beginning of 96, I put up, I was on America Online, and they used to have free classified ads, and I started by advertising a book I wrote, which was called Truly Huge, which basically was geared towards natural bodybuilding and hard gainer training, and Truly Huge meant, you know, to get as big as you can by natural means, truly huge rather than fakely or artificially huge. And then I realized at some point, well, you know, what I need to do is get a website. And there were already people who had websites previous to that, but it's not the amount that they have now. And, you know, I launched my first simple website just around July 96, even though I probably started on the internet around more like March or April.
That's incredible.
And just continued to expand the site, and just perseverance, and people like it, I guess, so I've stuck around.
Now, let's rewind and let's go actually before 96 when you launched this site, and talk about your own personal journey. When did you first learn about bodybuilding, and what was kind of the history behind you becoming involved with the industry?
I mean, I was kind of aware of it earlier in my life, when in 77 when the Incredible Hulk came on TV, because I already liked the Hulk, so I watched that, and then became aware of Lou Ferrigno. And then a friend of mine in 78, who I hadn't seen in a few years, he had moved away, and we got back in touch, and he told, you know, he had been working out, and he definitely was getting in good shape for a teenager, and so he got me excited about it, and he told me, you know, you got to watch Pump and Iron. And back in 78, Pump and Iron was on the public broadcasting channel, which was 13 when I was living in New York, a lot. I mean, almost every weekend it was on. And I watched that movie, and I got really excited. I said, wow, this is so cool, you know? And went out. I mean, actually, right after the movie was over, I jumped down on the floor and started doing push-ups. I was like, I want to work out. I want to get in shape. And then, you know, I got my first weight set and started training. And just read everything I could get my hands on, and started just... friends would come to me and say, hey, you know, I want to do it too. And I got my basement pretty well set up, and people would come over and train and ask me for advice on training and motivation. And, you know, I put people on programs. And, you know, that's how I started as a trainer. Just people ask you for help and you do it. And, you know, so I was always involved, always interested, constantly reading everything I could get my hands on. And then, finally I wrote down my ideas in a book right at the end of 1995. I wrote Truly Huge, and I was selling it in some of the magazines like Muscle Mag International, and it was selling okay. And then I finally got onto the internet and started the Truly Huge site.
Now, tell us a little bit about Truly Huge. I know you have the site, trulyhuge.com, and then you have the book. Is that available as an e-book, or is it a hard copy book, or both versions? And what?
It actually is available as both. I think right now I have it still selling as a physical book, a hard copy book, but and I do have the ebook done, and I just have to change the page to give the other option.
Okay.
I've been so busy, I haven't had a chance to do that quite yet.
Sure. Now, you know, in the past several decades, there have been tons of books about diet this, diet that, this training method, that training method. People are hearing, you know, low carb, low fat, super slow, this and that. What types of information related to training, nutrition, and everything else can people expect to find in Truly Huge?
You know, I'm of the philosophy that there's a reason why there's so many methods. And one of the things is there's a few reasons for that. One of the reasons is that the body will adapt to any type of training you do. If there was one perfect training routine, I would love that, because I'd just do that routine from now until the end of time. But the problem is that the body adapts to a specific type of training, and then you need to change to get the body to change. So there's a lot of different training routines, and also mentally, some people's personalities will go along more with a specific approach. Like the type of person who has a personality that he just likes to get the job done and get it, you know, work hard, get in, get out, will of course gravitate towards high intensity training. And some people are more, you know, they don't want to work as hard, but they're more willing to work longer. And they'll tend to gravitate towards more of a volume approach. Diet's a similar thing. There's, you know, I mean, if there was one perfect diet for everybody, that would be great too. But there's also just factors of certain different people like to eat different things. So somebody who really likes to eat meat, he may gravitate towards a low-carb type plan. And somebody who likes carbs more may go towards a low-fat plan. And obviously there have been people who have benefited from all these diets. And some people find one diet works better for them. I've tried many different kinds, and I tend to go back to the ones that work best for me. So what you'll find, I mean, Truly Huge, we try to make it an open forum that ideas, you know, share new ideas, and, you know, people can get different viewpoints and maybe try something they haven't tried before and see if it works for them.
You know, one of the points that you made that I really liked was about the fact that there may be physical reasons people try different programs, but there's mm-hmm. also psychological reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so true, and I think so many people touch on this, and some people get into raging debates over what the best training method is. And there was a phrase or a quote, and I don't know who I can attribute it to, but I heard it and I loved it. And it was that, you know, if you want to have some crown work or some cavities filled in your teeth, you don't go to the first person with a beautiful smile. You go to a dentist who's trained with that. And so many
right.
people, they find what works best for them, but they don't necessarily know what works great for other people. And that's why I love to hear about sites like yours that encourage people through community and other methods to really explore the different ways, because like you said, the body does adapt, and there's so many different techniques, whether it's diet or training or nutrition. Now, I'm interested to know, because you've been involved with bodybuilding for such a long time, I mean several decades, what are some of the major trends and changes that you've seen, and perhaps maybe some things have improved the sport, so to speak, our knowledge of nutrition, for example, but other things may have made it a little bit more too complex, and sometimes I think people need to just get back to basics. What are your observations about this?
Well, I think that there's opposite trends happening. Since I've been involved, there's a trend towards more and more drug use, I mean, in pro bodybuilding. I mean, the pro bodybuilders, in my mind these days, not every single one of them, but some of the top bodybuilders just have gone past the point of where the aesthetics of a body are no longer there anymore. They're just big monsters with distended bellies because of all the drug use. And, you know, I'd like to see a little more sanity. I mean, when I first came around in 78, in the early 80s, I thought that the people then just looked fantastic. They looked like statues. They had small waists. There was aesthetics to it. It wasn't just, bodybuilding to me has never been about just getting gigantic. You know, it's like, you know, putting muscle on the right places so it improves the way the body looks, you know, the big broad shoulders, small waist, big arms, you know, there's a certain classic look that I appreciate. Now, but while this is happening, there's still another trend where there are more and more natural bodybuilding federations, there's more books that are, more books and programs and magazines and things like that that will print routines that make sense, routines and diets that would make sense for the average person and the drug-free person to train on. So there's those two opposite trends happening, and you know, what Truly Huge is about, we've you know, tried to promote drug-free bodybuilding and give people the information they need, because if you're trying to train as if you were on drugs, you're going to be disappointed with your results, and then you're going to want to go on drugs. So, you know, there's people who come to me all the time and say, you know, I'm fed up. I want to go on steroids. And I say, well, first, before you even consider that, let me look at your training and diet. And their training and diet is terrible. I mean, they're training way too much, and they're eating way too little, and then they wonder why they don't grow. And you know, I usually straighten them out, and I've had many people come back to me and say, you know, I'm doing good. I don't need now to break the law and risk my health just to put on some muscle, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's interesting that you share that, because a common question that I receive is, you know, what's realistic? What's a realistic goal for my body? And people, they see the athletes who are competing in, for example, the Mr. Olympia. And then they see these physiques that are built, and, you know, the competitors themselves in certain competitions admit to using steroids, and so that there's no shroud of mystery around it. However, there's other athletes that people look at who have these phenomenal, huge physiques that claim to be 100% natural, and people go, well, you know, these people are just as large and just as freaky as the others, but they're natural. I must need to try their system or use their technique. And then they tell me, they say, you know, I want to put on 20 pounds of muscle over the next month. So what's the best routine to do it? Right?
Right.
So what are some reality checks as far as people when they're looking at, for example, increasing their bench press or putting on size on their arms? Like, they want to pursue those 22-inch biceps. What are some reality checks they can look into as far as, you know, the rate at it's practical to gain muscle, for example?
Well, 20 pounds is a month. In 1 month is pretty unrealistic. You know, it's hard to say because people will gain at a different rate. I mean, if somebody put on 20 pounds in a year, that would be pretty incredible. And some people have definitely been able to do that with, you know, with a good diet and training very hard. You know, the thing is, sometimes you can, and as far as arms, you know, the problem is that a lot of people lie about arm size. Arthur Jones, who started the high-intensity training ideas, who originated them, he was able to measure the arms of the top bodybuilders, and many of them had much smaller measurements than they claimed. So you got to take those measurements with a grain of salt, and really just, I mean, you know, if you now have 14-inch arms, you know, your next goal should be to get them to 15. Maybe, you know, if you did an arm specialization program in a few months, you could get them up to 15. You know, and also you have to think about wrist size and things like that. If you have a wrist that only measures 6 inches, you know, you're not really thinking about 20-inch arms. You know, 16-inch arms would look pretty incredible with a 6-inch wrist. That's 10 inches bigger than your wrist, which is what a realistic goal is. And that, I mean, once you get there, of course, you know, you can always try to get bigger than that. But usually that's what a natural trainer is going to shoot for, 10 inches bigger than his wrist. And there's other measurements. There were charts and things like that made up in the 60s before drug use was really prevalent, which gave some more realistic goals for people. I think you can find them online. There's a couple of different charts of those. I think I even have one on one of my websites, either MuscleNet.com or TrulyHuge.com. There's a chart up there that has more realistic goals for a drug-free trainee.
And that's something that I've always been fascinated with. And I felt that the best way to find information that's not tainted, because I really believe that people today get a double hit as far as misinformation is concerned. And the first hit is what we've talked about with the unrealistic expectations related to drug use in the sport. And the second hit is the sudden mainstream onslaught of supplement use. And I agree there's some great supplements out there, but I believe the advertising and marketing has really just led people in a tailspin, because there's a lot of sites that appear to be reputable sites with very in-depth articles that are really simply commissioned by the manufacturers of certain products, and every article has some little twist that promotes this product or that product. And so I've always loved to go back in history before there was creatine and certain protein powders and whatnot and see what the philosophies were. In fact, I'm such a buff for this. One of my clients, a guy by the name of Dr. Joe Vitale, and he's a big internet marketing guru, but he is fascinated with history, and when he is passionate about something, he'll go back and research these items. And so for my birthday, he gave me a gift, and one of them was an article that was published in an 1860 magazine by Eugene Sandow, who, you know, is considered sort of one of the grandfathers of bodybuilding. And it was very interesting to see the concepts and techniques. I mean, there were some concerns even 100 years ago, 150 years ago, that are reflected today. For example, he was concerned with the rate of overweight and obesity and how people were inactive in America. And these are the same concerns we echo today. But on the other hand, he was talking about how if he feels the need to burn extra calories, he'll flex his muscles while he's enjoying a smoke out back. So, and I just found that amusing, and you know, how it relates. So definitely a lot of change. Now, I understand at your site at Truly Huge, you have a supplement line. Is that something that you manufacture? You simply represent an offer? How does that work?
Well, Truly Huge does have its own supplement line, Truly Huge Supplements, which is contract manufactured. You know, we hire a lab to make our formulations. And we also do carry Cybergenics line and some Universal and a couple other miscellaneous supplements. We try to carry you know, what we feel is best and works, and what people do get results from. Similar with training and diet, it's interesting with supplements also. Of course, there's some supplements out there that really just aren't worth the money. And, you know, because there's so many different supplements, people have to, they have to find something different or whatever. And, you know, sometimes it's just not really worth the money. But there's also that the individual differences, because I've read reviews and things like that, and there's, you know, even some of the best supplements out there, somebody still says, well, I tried it and didn't get anything out of it. You know, I don't know any, I haven't found any supplement where somebody didn't have results, you know, where everybody who ever tried it said it's the greatest thing, you know, greatest thing in the world. You know, what you're looking for is the majority of people. Now, that may just have to do with the person's individual physiology. That wasn't the substance that the body needed at that time. You know, if somebody, let's say creatine, right? Somebody has a diet that's really heavy in red meat, they don't have, you know, necessarily maybe too much of a deficiency of creatine. But somebody who's a vegetarian or something like that may find that he blows up on creatine. So there's also those individual differences. And even, you know, after you do all your research on what you think is a good supplement for you to try, it's still just like a routine or a diet. You still have to try it and see how it works for you and decide if it's worth trying again. You know, if you get results from it, you'll want to use it again.
And that's exactly what the topic of my weekly newsletter was this week, was asking the right question. And we even touched upon this far earlier in the conversation that, you know, someone wants to get large and they say, okay, what's the best training routine? And it's just not the right question, right? Because there's a lot more involved. There's the nutrition, the supplementation, everything else. And sometimes right. People say, what's the best supplement? Or they say, well, I'm thinking about buying this. Did it work for you? And it's like, well, you know, does it really matter if it worked for me? The question is, does it work for you? You can have 100 people tell you it worked for them, but if you take it and don't see a result, are you going to keep spending money just because everyone else said they did? But having right. said that, you know, in the position you're at with being able to share these supplements, what are some of the supplements that people who visit your site consistently purchase and provide positive feedback with as related to muscle gain, that they consistently say, you know, this is something that I think really works, I notice a difference, and I'm going to keep buying this supplement?
Well, yeah, those are our top sellers, which from number one down would be AndroShock, which basically is an herbal testosterone booster androgenic formula after androstenedione was banned from the market. It was made as a replacement product, and that's one of our best sellers, and people who have bought it before continue to buy it and use it. And then there's Ectobolin, which is a beta-ectosterone product, which is a non-hormonal formula, which studies have showed increase protein synthesis, so the ability of the muscles to actually use dietary protein to make new muscle.
So are you saying that that's your number two seller, the ectosterone?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Because I remember reading about that in, gosh, it was about 6 years ago, I think, when some of the research first hit the market, and there was the book that Bill Phillips put out, the Sports Supplement Review. And I remember the irony, because at first he said, well, this is just bug juice, basically. But then a few years later, EAS actually came out with a product based on that.
Right. You know, Bill's Supplement Review is a good book. I have it on the shelf. But you still got to realize it was meant to sell Bill's products.
Absolutely.
So
I mean, anytime
you
know, you
have to take it. You know, I mean, there is good information in it. I'm not even saying it wasn't, but
sure.
You know, he wasn't selling it at the time.
Right. Exactly. Well, I mean, and that's why I wanted to raise the point too, because there's people who say, you know, what's going on with this or that, and I don't want to maybe state something that's a popular seller that, you know, I thought was gone from the market, but I noticed certain trends like creatine, for example, glutamine, the ectosterone, those have some staying power. They've been on the market for years, but then there's been quite a few other things that were promised as the next creatine, the huge anabolic, metabolic mass building while you sleep 5 pounds of muscle, that were kind of hyped and posted around and then faded away. And so one of the pieces of advice I give people is, you know, when you're considering a supplement, if it's brand new, give it some time. I know you want to jump on the bandwagon and win the race, but there's some proven supplements that have been out there, and they're selling even after years and years, and there's a reason people keep buying them.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, you know, the problem with some of these supplements is they go by a study that the dosage was so much higher than what the recommended dosage for the supplement you buy is, because probably it would be cost prohibitive to take that kind of dosage.
Something like pyruvate, for example.
Right. Yeah, supplements like that, it's like the amount you're going to take isn't up to the amount of the study. So while it still may be a good supplement, you could take it in their recommended dosage and say, well, I really didn't get much out of that. So there's that too. You know, sometimes there's worthless supplements. Sometimes there's supplements that could be beneficial. Probably one of the only supplements that really gave you correct dosage information was creatine, because they're like, yeah, go take 20-30 grams a day, you know. And while people got, you know, the problem with that was some people got stomach upset from that, but that was closer to the actual, you know, the actual study showed that that was the dosages needed at that time. But
yeah,
there's a lot of others that I'm like, yeah, this is just, you know, when you go back and look at the research, you're like, yeah, that's not enough. But it probably would have been too expensive to sell somebody, you know, something that the dosage was that much.
Sure. Now, I cut you off short. You had mentioned you did your top two. Were there a couple others in the top five you wanted to mention?
Yeah. then nitrobol, which is our amino acid formulation, which is just, I mean, it's just an amino acid formulation, but it's made to be as absorbable as possible. And, you know, the problem with protein is it's not necessarily how much you take, but how much your body can actually use of it. And that was the whole idea when nitrobol was formulated, to make it as absorbable as possible. And, you know, I take it right after my workouts. I take nitrobol because I, you know, want to get, you know, the protein in and used by the muscles as quickly as possible. And, you know, just by the amount of people who reorder, people definitely like it, and it definitely works for them. And then probably after that is our Pumped Extreme, which actually is a new supplement but is doing very well. It's a crealkaline complex, which is a buffered creatine. The problem with creatine was it was breaking down into its byproduct, which is creatinine, which is actually toxic, and then that was the cause of, first of all, people needing to take mega doses of creatine, and then secondly, the stomach upset and things like that. And crealkaline isn't supposed to be able to break down into creatinine because it is buffered, it's alkalized. And you need to take much less than you normally would, and to get the same benefits as if you took the mega doses, and people taking it aren't having the bloating and intestinal upset with regular creatine. And then just fat burner, you know, we have a fat burner that we call the Herbal Fat Melter, which sells very well. And I would say that that's our top five of the Truly Huge line. You know, we also sell the Cybergenics. Probably the best selling of the Cybergenics is the Quick Trim, which is a 14-day system that, you know, for a short amount of time, like 2 weeks, you know, if you do the right diet and exercise program, you can definitely take off a good a really good amount of fat. Of course, you can't do that indefinitely, because the body's eventually gonna, you know, your body's whole goal is to stay the same, homeostasis, and eventually it's gonna say, hey, too much change too fast. But done right for a short period of time, you can make some big changes before your body starts to rebel against it. And basically, it's for somebody who wants to get ready for something. You know, sometimes women use it to get ready for, let's say, a vacation or a wedding or something. But it can be used even as a pre-contest program. It has everything, including the cutting the water at the end and cutting the, you know, first drinking a lot of water and then cutting it so the water comes out from under the skin, and cutting sodium. So it can even be used as a pre-contest program, or if just somebody wants to look really great on a certain day.
That sounds fantastic. So we've covered the supplement side of things. I know there's a lot on the website. You've got the supplements available. You've got your book available. There's some forums available, training advice. Let's talk a little bit about training, because you mentioned, for example, a lot of people, when they start out, they're maybe training too much because they're doing the drug-using bodybuilder's mm-hmm. routine instead of their own routine. What are mm-hmm. some of the other common mistakes you see people make, and maybe some advice? Someone's listening to this and they're still looking to kind of do it on their own. They're not, say, ready to hire a trainer or whatever, and they want to piece together their own program. What are some tips or foundations you think are key for a successful program, especially for a natural person not using steroids?
You're talking about for a person who's just starting?
For a person who's just starting, and then we can talk about a person who's mm-hmm. more advanced.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest problems I see with a person who's just starting, they just, you know, they go and buy one of the magazines on the newsstand and go and see, well, geez, you know, I should do this guy's routine. And, you know, they start out training, you know, 6 days a week, or, you know, 12, 15, 20 sets per body part. And it's just not how a beginner should train. Not even their hero train like that as a beginner. You know, a beginner should just concentrate on a handful of basic exercises, increase his strength in them, and then as his, you know, I mean, he's got to also build up his strength and endurance, and then as he advances, he can add in some more exercises. Also, he's learning about his own body. If he's paying attention, he'll learn things about his own body, like how fast he recovers from exercise, and what his tolerance for volume is. So, you know, because while we're physically all the same, not everybody has the same abilities. Like, you know, somebody who wants to play baseball is going to necessarily play. He may never play as good as a professional baseball player, so he's got to take into consideration what his strengths and weaknesses are. Just like somebody who wants to get into bodybuilding, while he's in the beginner phase, he's going to learn a lot about his body, what he needs. You know, he might have legs that grow really fast, but his shoulders, you know, grow slower, so he's going to have to maybe do some shoulder specialization. And a lot of beginners really, especially a young guy who needs to gain weight, they really just are not eating enough. I mean, you know, people say all the time, I can't gain weight. And, you know, I had the same problem too. And I just realized, you know, when I finally broke past that, a certain barrier I had weight-wise, and I said, gee, you know, I mean, I really ate a lot of food, and, you know, I just realized, and, you know, I made a really good amount of gains in a short period of time, and I just realized I never ate right before. I just wasn't, you know, even though I thought it was enough, it just wasn't, and that's one of the biggest problems. You know, first of all, they're eating the wrong things, and second of all, they don't even eat enough volume of food in general.
So let's talk about that a little bit, and understanding that it's going to be different for everyone. But as someone who's been training for quite some time and has really, you know, learned your own body over time, what is a typical day as far as nutrition's concerned for you?
Typical day as far as I'm concerned? I mean, I try to get some high quality protein every few hours, because that's really what the body requires if you really want to be able to put on muscle or even maintain muscle. You know, every 2.5 hours, maybe 3 or 4 at the very longest, I'll eat some type of protein, high quality protein. You know, meats. You know, beef, chicken, eggs. Right now, since I'm not really trying to gain, I don't eat too many dairy products. I tend to gain weight when I eat a lot of dairy. And if I'm just trying to maintain or lose a little bit of fat, I'll keep away from dairy. And also, since I'm not trying to gain, I don't necessarily eat a lot of carbohydrates. I eat enough for energy needs and not more than that. And even the carbohydrates I eat tend to be complex carbohydrates like fruits and vegetables rather than simple carbs like processed foods, breads, and pasta. So that'd be my basic day. You know, if I was trying to put on some weight, I'd add in a little bit more carbohydrates and a little more dairy, and that helps push my weight up if that's my goal at the time.
So tell us what your workout routine looks like. How often do you train in a week, and how do you split up your body parts, and how much time are you actually spending in the gym?
You know, that really all depends on where I'm at. Like I said, I find that my body will adapt to almost any routine I do. So once I find, what I do is I'll do a routine until I find it going stale. That I just find, you know, in the beginning, most routines will give you really good gains, and sometimes you get excited, and then you stay on it way too long. And then you know, you've been on it 6 months, and then you realize, you know, the last 3 months, I haven't even gotten much out of this. So what I'll do is I will do a routine until I feel my body's going stale on, and then switch. So it's hard to say. I've done many different things. I've trained 6 days a week. I've trained once or twice a week. I've done a lot of different things. But I'd say on the average, I usually train 3 to 4 times a week. If I train 4 days a week, sometimes it's two on, one off, but more often it's just every other day, which ends up about 4 days in a 7 day period. I try to get in and out of the gym in under an hour, because I do believe that a natural trainees can only train about that long before the cortisol and catabolic hormones build up too much in the body. So that's pretty much a rule that I, no matter what I do, I try to get in and out of the gym in about an hour. Sometimes I'll do a full body routine 3 days a week. Sometimes I'll do I'll split it in two parts. Like I'll do chest, biceps, and legs 1 day, and then rest the day, and then I'll do back, shoulders, and triceps the next day, and then rest one more day and go back to the first one. And sometimes I'll break it up into three sections. Like I'll do I might do chest, shoulders, triceps 1 day, or let's say Monday, and then Wednesday do legs, and then Friday do back and biceps. That might be another type of split I'll use at times. I mean, what I do is I do different routines and different techniques, and I keep really accurate records of these things, and I watch how my body reacts to them. And there's certain routines, while they'll go stale, you can always go back to them at some point later and get gains again. So I have my little bag of tricks, and I'm always trying to expand that bag by trying different things. And if I find it, the routine worked well for me, I that's on the list of something to go back to when a current routine has gone stale. And I do train high intensity style, but I'll also train volume style at times. Although it's still a volume program that's more sensible for a natural bodybuilder. I still do try to get in and out of the gym in under an hour. When I'm doing high intensity, it may be more like 20 minutes. If I'm doing a volume program, it may stretch out to about that hour point.
You know, that's interesting what you shared about having certain routines that work, because I've done the exact same thing. And for the longest time, for years and years, I did pretty much a new routine every time I started something, and kept detailed notes in a journal. And for instance, I've found that, you know, my chest responds to training differently than my back, my legs, whatever. And for example, for my arms, out of all the variations of arm routines, and I must have tried maybe 20 different styles of arm routines, 20 or 30, there's a routine that Ian King, an Australian strength coach, developed called 12 Weeks to Great Guns. And there's a routine that Dennis Weiss basically developed and published to bodybuilding.com. And it was this routine that had all these funky ways of doing sets, like you do one rep and rest the second, then two reps and rest 2 seconds, and three reps and rest 3 seconds, like that. Mm-hmm. And those are the two routines that consistently, when I go back to, if I haven't done them for a while, will put size on my arms. Other routines, I'll gain strength, but I know the two routines that'll put size on me if I'm not doing them back to back, or, you know, if I space them out. And so that's something I encourage everyone to do, is that, you know, there's certain routines that just aren't going to do it for you. And there's routines that'll do great. That's like with German volume training. That was such a trend and a fad for a while, and everyone said, oh, I'll do German volume training. And I did German volume training, and I can tell you what, it did wonders for my chest. I would do remarkable, but I couldn't do it as 10 sets of 10, as it was popularized. My chest handles lower reps. I know this from all my journals, that if I try to do high reps on my chest, I get nothing out of it. But if I do, for example, 8 sets of 6, then I have a phenomenal chest workout.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's such a key that you described there, that people need to not only try different routines, but really keep a journal and understand what's been working for them and what hasn't been. Because when you go back and read that, you can tell, see the story. You know, my story says that my arms respond best when I do volume training with my arms and cut back on my training for everything else in my body. So if I'm going to do a lot of time on my arms, then I'm going to do just a really short workout for chest. My chest wants volume. My legs want high rep sets. The best gains I get with my legs, which, you know, I'm reluctant to train because they gain so well now, but is really like higher rep, like breathing squats.
Mm-hmm.
and extended dumbbell sets. But these are all things that I didn't have someone, you know, walk up and look at me and eyeball me and say, okay, this is how it's going to be. This is from experimentation and keeping notes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. It's definitely, you know, I thought of this before. You know, there are certain rules. There are certain rules that are stable to everybody, you know, that you can't gain if you're overtrained. You know, if you want to gain weight, you gotta eat more calories than you burn.
You gotta overload the weight.
You gotta take in less calories. You gotta take in less calories than your body needs, but within those rules, there's still things like, well, what for this individual person constitutes overtraining? At what point is it too much for him? Because there's some people, just like, I mean, Mike Mentzer said, just like going out in the sun. There's people who could go out, lay out all day, and get up, and they're tan. And another guy goes out for 2 hours, and he's burned.
2 hours, I go out for 15 minutes on an overcast day, and I've got a burn if I don't put sunscreen on. So
yeah, exactly. Not everybody has the same tolerance for the sun, and not everybody has the same tolerance for exercise. And you got to work within your tolerance. One thing that I disagree with Mentzer is, I think that recovery ability itself can be trained. Because if you can train, any ability of the body. You can train your body to recover faster if you train it to. You know, sometimes you know, there are I don't know if you know about overreaching rather than overtraining, where you purposely slightly overtrain for a short period of time so that your body's adaptive ability increases.
Sure.
And then you suddenly cut down the training volume. So then you get a increase of adaption, but the volume's lowered, so your body gets a chance to catch up and make a big gain. And Mentzer just was like, well, you always got to train less often and less often and less often, but that never trains your recovery ability itself.
That's right, and I agree 100%. In fact, Yeah, to an extent, it's not an exact comparison, but for example, marathon runners. I trained for a half marathon in South Dakota, and it's very similar when you're training for endurance. You're stretching your ability and the length of time, and your body, it's not that, you know, one person has the ability to run 20 miles and one has the ability to run 5. You have an ability relative to what you can run right now. And if you go to any running coach, they're going to ask what volume of running and what distance you can handle, and then they're going to build something forward from that. And I believe completely with the training, because, you know, it's almost every time someone identifies a problem, sometimes people don't get the full picture and there's that backlash. And overtraining is the same thing. Overtraining is very real. And I would say 9 times out of 10, a client who hires me is doing too much instead of too little, and they're doing it the wrong way. However, it can become an excuse too, where people say, well, you know, 2-hour workouts, those don't work for anyone. But I can, you know, if you've ever been at a facility with someone who's training for an Olympic program, for example, an Olympic track program, some of these athletes train for 4, 5, 6 hours a day. And people say, well, you know, that's overtraining. Well, no, they're the top athletes in the world. But the thing is number one, of course, they have their own genetics and their own background. But the other thing is they've been doing this for a long time, and they've been increasing their training volume. And I agree right. with your statement that the recovery is not so much that there's an absolute recovery. It's your recovery compared to what your body's used to. I mean, that's why if I'm doing my job, which is very convenient, sitting here in my home office enjoying the view of palm trees outside, and suddenly someone says, hey, why don't you come with me and let's roof some houses over the weekend? I'm not going to be able to move for a week. My body is going to hurt in places I never knew existed, but someone who does that for a living, they're able to handle that volume, you know?
You know, the funny thing is I did that when I was a teenager.
Uh-huh.
And I was in pretty good shape, you know, but my hands were blistered.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm not used to holding onto a hammer for like 10 hours a day, you know?
That's right.
So, of course, anything you do, you have to take what your current abilities are and work to improve them.
So
anything done too fast and too suddenly is going to be, you know, you're going to get overly sore or wiped out from.
So let's do this. We're at the top of the hour right now, and so I want to close down the recorded portion and open it up for any questions people might have. But what I'd like to do is, we've covered a lot of ground, and someone new listening to this, and we have a lot of people who come to our site who are really looking for that gateway to fitness. Now, they know there's a place they can go to called trulyhuge.com. The word trulyhuge.com. They know that you've got a book they can order that has these principles, a community, there's supplements available, there's a lot on the website. But beyond that, beyond your book and some of those concepts, what would you say for someone who's starting out, who says, okay, I'm excited, I want to get into this thing called bodybuilding, I don't know where to start. What are some of the resources, maybe your favorite websites, favorite books, favorite materials that you believe people just starting out should get their hands on and have in front of them to really have the resources they need to get started?
Okay. Somebody's just getting started. Some of my favorite books, I do very much like Mike Spencer's books. I feel he had a lot of good points. There's also a strength coach named Pavel Sosselin that I has fantastic ideas. One of the best books there is called Keys to Progress by John McCollum. As far as I'm concerned, that's the best bang for your buck you can get anywhere. I think it's only about $20, and there's so much material in there that it's just incredible. Different websites, of course, bodybuilding.com has huge, huge article database. It also has some articles by me, which is nice too.
I've got some there too, so it's even
you'll get double promotion
for that
and
site.
Just like my site, they really do. It really is an open forum to share ideas. They're not biased. You know, you can read all different kinds of ideas, even conflicting ideas, there. And which is good, because you can, you know, you can open up your mind to something. I mean, you know, you have to be open to possibilities. I personally was trained too long on high intensity style. And while that works, my body got so used to it that I needed a change. And then I tried what I call Russian volume training, which is I learned it from Pavel Sosselin. I did an interview with him, just like you're doing an interview with me. And my body responded great. But before, you know, my mind wasn't open to it until that point. So, and then after that, I was much more like, you know what, I need to be more open to new ideas. Because, like I said before, the body is an adaptive machine. Also just use the search engines. You know, put in, you know, a lot of people ask me questions, and I, like, let's say somebody says, you know, sometimes I get questions like, are there any bodybuilding contests in South Dakota, you know? And then I'll just go to a search engine and put in bodybuilding contests in South Dakota, and then I'll answer their question. So really use it, you know, put in exactly what you're looking for in the search engine and see what you can find. You know, bicep routines, different, you know, try different searches. The internet's an amazing thing, because you know, you'd have to go to a library, and you couldn't find all the material that you can now find in your own home just typing at your own keyboard. It's really incredible, and just learn how to find the things you're looking for, and just read and try different things, and you know, learn your own body, like we were saying before. And also, I forgot to mention, I mean, I do have personal online personal training services, which we do by email, and we do take full information on a person, and I put them on the routine that I think's best for them at that point, and then keep talking to them by email to see how they're responding, because that's the important thing. How is this individual responding to what I put them on, and then make any changes necessary. So that's another possibility. If somebody wanted to have me as their coach by email, we also have that service.
And I think that's a phenomenal service. I offer that similar service, and everyone who signs up to my e-zine gets access to a white paper that I had someone report on about the benefits of online personal training. And, you know, whether it's through myself, whether it's through you or whomever, I think the most amazing thing about the internet is that someone who's sitting in their room and says, you know, I connect to this guy, I like his concepts, I think he's got it going on, they don't have to be right down the street from you. It's no longer, you know, necessary for someone to travel to Venice Beach and work out in the legendary gym there just to get these concepts, that they can hire someone like yourself from a distance and receive this training online. It's just absolutely phenomenal. And I think that, I know a lot of people take advantage of it. I think there's quite a few people out there who still aren't sure how personal training online works. And, you know, I encourage people to check it out and find someone you connect with and try it, because there's actual research, there's actual studies in clinical trials where they've shown people benefit more from the online personal training than even in-person trainers, because there's so much more communication through email, so much more information to be had. So
wow,
that's exciting. It was actually the Journal of the American Medical Association published a study that we referenced related to that. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's neat. I didn't even know that. That's incredible.
Well, see, now you have something more to share with with the people there. Well, we've been here for an hour, and it's been a phenomenal hour. I mean, just so much information. And I appreciate you taking the time to come here and share it with us. And what I'm going to do is let you, you know, share any closing thoughts you have, but I want to thank you for coming on the call on behalf of everyone listening to this, and we really appreciate and value your time with us.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I'm going to go ahead and close down the recording, and then we'll open up the call to see if anyone on the line has any questions.